Sarah and Adam Morgan appear to have it all. She's a brilliant criminal defense attorney, he's a novelist with critical acclaim, and together they own both a luxurious Tudor mansion in DC's Caloroma neighborhood and a picturesque lake house retreat. Their 10th anniversary should be a celebration of their perfect marriage, but instead becomes the catalyst for revealing its deadly flaws. The Perfect Marriage has captivated readers worldwide since its release, becoming a book club favorite and landing on multiple bestseller lists. Author Geneva Rose crafts a psychological thriller that forces readers to question how well we truly know those closest to us. The novel's twisting narrative has drawn comparisons to Gone Girl and The Girl on the Train, with its shocking conclusion leaving readers gasping and immediately texting friends to discuss the final revelation. Sarah Morgan's life revolves around her prestigious law career at Caldwell & Shaw, where she's made partner faster than anyone in the firm's history. When she cancels their 10th anniversary trip to their lake house to prepare for the high-profile Henderson murder case, it's just another disappointment in a long line for her husband, Adam. Their tense interaction over breakfast, her typing emails while he stares at his cooling coffee, reveals the fundamental tension in their marriage. Sarah's ambition consistently overshadows their relationship, though passionate moments still flicker between them, especially during their rare weekend getaways. Despite the strain, she gives Adam an extravagant Patek Philippe watch engraved with 5,256,000, the number of minutes in 10 years of marriage, a gesture that speaks to both her material success and her mathematical approach to romance. The lake house on Lake Manassas, a stunning three-bedroom retreat with floor-to-ceiling windows and a wraparound deck, was meant to be their shared sanctuary. Instead, it has become solely Adam's retreat due to Sarah's perpetual absence. There, surrounded by towering pines and the gentle lap of water against the shore, Adam finds the creative space for his writing that he can't get in their modernist DC townhouse. Their relationship has evolved dramatically from their college days at Duke, where they fell in love as literature and political science students, sharing dreams over coffee at the campus bookstore and stealing kisses between classes. While Sarah has achieved her dream of becoming a top criminal defense attorney with a corner office and a list of high-profile clients, Adam's writing career peaked with his first book, The Midnight Hour, which earned critical acclaim but modest sales. His subsequent novels, Shadow's Edge and The Last Light, flopped spectacularly, leaving him feeling inadequate beside his successful wife, who now earns seven figures annually. This imbalance has created the perfect breeding ground for infidelity. Adam has found solace in an affair with Kelly Summers, a local cafe worker 15 years his junior, who provides the attention and admiration he craves but no longer receives from Sarah. Their relationship began innocently enough, conversations about books over morning coffee, but quickly evolved into clandestine meetings at her small apartment above the cafe. The affair has become his emotional lifeline. He needs both women to feel complete, Sarah for the foundation of love they built together, their shared history, and the lifestyle she provides, and Kelly for the validation his ego now requires and the uncomplicated adoration she offers. What appears as a typical story of marital dissatisfaction and infidelity, played out in expensive restaurants where Sarah checks her phone and Adam checks his watch, is actually the foundation for something far more sinister. The cracks in their perfect marriage, hidden behind social media posts of charity galas and vacation photos, aren't just threatening their relationship, they're creating the perfect conditions for murder. Every canceled date, every missed phone call, every cold shoulder adds another brick to a wall of resentment that will soon crumble with devastating consequences. Adam's relationship with Kelly began innocently enough at Seth's Coffee, a local cafe nestled between pine trees near the lake house. He was immediately drawn to her imperfect perfection, her constellation of freckles scattered across sun-kissed cheeks, chestnut-brown hair that caught the light like autumn leaves, and a carefree demeanor that contrasted sharply with Sarah's calculated personality. Despite both wearing wedding rings that glinted accusingly in the afternoon sun, they connected deeply, recognizing in each other a shared melancholy that spoke of dreams deferred and lives half-lived. Their first encounter evolved from casual conversation over cooling lattes to an intense connection that crackled with electricity. Kelly followed Adam home to his lakeside retreat, where they made love multiple times on her bearskin rug, the afternoon light painting shadows across their intertwined bodies. Adam describes this initial encounter in visceral terms, like heroin coursing through my veins, setting the stage for an 18-month affair that would spiral into obsession and ultimately lead to Kelly's death. The psychological complexity of their affair reveals deep-seated needs in both characters. For Adam, Kelly represents everything his life with Sarah has lost: spontaneity in place of rigid schedules, genuine admiration instead of subtle criticism, and unconditional attention rather than distracted acknowledgement. She makes him feel like the successful novelist he once was, rather than the failing writer living in his wife's considerable shadow. Kelly, meanwhile, appears to be running from her own demons, dropping calculated hints about her troubled marriage to Scott, describing controlling behavior and emotional manipulation, creating a bond of shared victimhood between the lovers. The affair takes a dramatic turn when Kelly appears at Adam's cabin door one stormy night, her face bruised and bloodied, her designer clothes torn. When Adam, protective instincts firing, offers to call police, she breaks down and reveals her shocking past. Her real name is Jenna Way, and she had been the primary suspect in her first husband's murder in Seattle 3 years ago. The charges were dismissed when key DNA evidence mysteriously vanished from the police evidence locker, but the cloud of suspicion never fully lifted. Despite this revelation about her identity and troubled history, Adam, already too deeply entangled, reassures her that he fell in love with Kelly, not Jenna, swearing a passionate oath that Scott would never lay hands on her again. This pivotal moment transforms their relationship from a passionate escape into something far more dangerous, a connection that threatens not just two marriages, but potentially lives. The revelation of Kelly's true identity as Jenna Way introduces the first major twist in the narrative, casting doubt on everything that came before and suggesting that nothing and no one in this story is exactly as they appear. Her past as a possible murderer adds a layer of danger to their liaison, turning their romance into a potential powder keg. The morning after Sarah suggests they try for a baby, a surprising and hopeful pivot in their relationship, Adam's world violently implodes when Sheriff Stevens and Deputy Hudson arrive at his door. The contrast between the previous night's intimate conversation about their future and the harsh reality of the present moment couldn't be starker. After a brutal physical confrontation that leaves Adam bleeding and disoriented on his own floor, they arrest him without explanation, treating him with a level of aggression that suggests personal vindictiveness rather than professional duty. The truth emerges with devastating clarity only after hours in a cold interrogation room, where Deputy Hudson finally reveals the horrifying reality. Kelly has been found dead, stabbed to death in Adam's bed at the lake house. The location itself is damning, their private retreat now transformed into a crime scene. The peaceful lakeside setting, once a symbol of escape and romance, has become the stage for unimaginable violence. The crime scene details are particularly gruesome. Kelly was stabbed 37 times in what investigators immediately classify as a crime of passion. Each wound tells a story of rage and intimate violence, suggesting the perpetrator knew the victim personally. The evidence against Adam appears overwhelming and meticulously documented. His fingerprints scattered throughout the scene, biological evidence indicating recent sexual activity before her death, and perhaps most damning, a handwritten note in his distinctive handwriting declaring, "It's you. You're the words to a story I've been trying to write my whole life." The timing proves catastrophically ironic, as Adam had finally decided to end the affair following Sarah's heartfelt suggestion about starting a family, a decision that now seems both too late and irrelevant. When Sarah arrives at the sheriff's station, her commanding presence as a respected defense attorney initially draws deference from the staff. However, this professional courtesy crumbles when she's confronted with graphic photos of Kelly's mutilated body in their lake house bed, the same bed she and Adam shared during weekend getaways. The revelation hits her with dual impact: the shocking betrayal of Adam's infidelity and his possible role in a brutal murder. In this moment, Sarah undergoes a remarkable transformation that will define the story's trajectory, shifting from betrayed wife to determined defense attorney with a single, steel-edged declaration: I'll be representing him. This pivotal moment marks the complete collision of their personal and professional lives, creating a complex web of conflicting loyalties and obligations. Sarah must now deploy her considerable legal expertise to defend the husband who shattered their marriage, fighting to save him from a murder charge that carries the ultimate penalty. The situation raises profound questions that haunt both the characters and readers. Is Sarah defending Adam because she truly believes in his innocence? Does her decision stem from residual love that survives even this betrayal? Or are there deeper, more complex motivations hidden beneath her professional facade? These questions establish the psychological complexity that drives the narrative forward, as both characters navigate the aftermath of a crime that has destroyed their carefully constructed perfect life. As Sarah begins investigating Kelly's murder to defend Adam, layers of deception begin to unravel. Kelly Summers, it turns out, was actually Jenna Way, a woman previously charged with murdering her first husband by stabbing him to death before evidence mysteriously disappeared during trial. Even more shocking, Scott Summers, Kelly's abusive husband and a police officer in the very department investigating her murder, was one of the arresting officers on that original murder case before he married her. The investigation reveals additional suspects beyond Adam. Kelly had a stalker named Jesse Hook who frequented the coffee shop where she worked, memorizing her schedule and making her uncomfortable with his constant staring. He texted Kelly, "I'm sorry," the night of her murder and called her repeatedly beforehand. While his DNA doesn't match the mysterious third sample found at the crime scene, his obsession with Kelly makes him a person of interest. The autopsy results deliver another bombshell. Kelly was 4 weeks pregnant with Adam's child at the time of her murder. She also had Rohypnol in her system, suggesting she was drugged before being killed. Most intriguingly, while Adam's DNA was found under her fingernails and inside her body, two additional DNA samples were discovered, one belonging to Scott, her husband, and another unidentified donor. While searching Adam's desk at the lake house, Sarah discovers a hidden compartment containing a gun and a manila envelope with a photo of Adam and Kelly in an intimate embrace. The back bears a threatening message: "End it or I will." This suggests someone else knew about the affair and may have had motive to kill Kelly. As the investigation progresses, Sarah learns that Anne, her trusted assistant of 5 years, took the photo and wrote the threatening note to Adam. Anne admits she planned to tell Sarah about the affair if Adam didn't end it himself, but denies any involvement in Kelly's murder. This betrayal shakes Sarah's trust in those closest to her, creating another layer of complexity in an already tangled web of deceit. Despite the overwhelming evidence against Adam, Sarah constructs a methodical defense strategy focusing on creating reasonable doubt. With Adam officially charged and facing the death penalty, Sarah must navigate both her professional obligations and her personal feelings about her husband's betrayal. When DA Josh Peters offers to reduce a guilty plea sentence from 25 to 20 years without parole, Sarah presents the option to Adam. As his lawyer, she suggests taking the deal, but as his wife, she tells him to fight. Adam chooses to plead not guilty, clinging to hope despite the odds. This moment perfectly encapsulates their complex relationship. Sarah remains professionally committed to Adam's defense, while personally conflicted about his guilt and their future. Sarah's investigation focuses on 5 key facts that could create reasonable doubt. Scott threatened Kelly's life the night of her murder. Kelly was actually Jenna Way, who fled Wisconsin after being accused of murdering her first husband. Multiple people from Jenna's past had motives to kill her. Kelly was sleeping with at least 3 different men, as proven by DNA evidence. And Kelly had a stalker named Jesse Hook. The defense strategy is complicated by Adam's increasingly erratic behavior. When he discovers Anne wrote the threatening note, he violates his house arrest to confront her at Sarah's law firm. During this confrontation, Adam realizes that Bob, Sarah's colleague, is actually Nicholas Robert Miller, the brother of Kelly's first husband, whom she was accused of murdering. This revelation triggers a violent attack by Scott Summers against Bob, adding another layer of complexity to the case. Adam's escape from custody further damages his credibility and legal standing. After being recaptured, he learns that Rebecca Sanford, whom he believed was a reporter helping his investigation, was actually a private investigator hired by Scott Summers. This deception underscores how Adam's desperation has made him vulnerable to manipulation, potentially compromising Sarah's carefully constructed defense. The trial begins with Sarah making a bold opening statement, acknowledging her personal connection to the case. Adam is not only my client, he is my husband. The courtroom falls silent at this revelation as jurors exchange glances and the judge leans forward slightly. She admits his affair with Kelly hurt her deeply, describing it as a betrayal that shattered our marriage, but maintains with unwavering conviction that he didn't kill Kelly. Her opening remarks methodically present the five key facts of her defense strategy, emphasizing the distinction between the prosecution's circumstantial evidence and her concrete facts. She particularly focuses on the timeline discrepancy and the missing murder weapon, delivering each point with precise, calculated intensity. The narrative jumps ahead to the verdict, creating suspense about what transpired during the trial itself. Sarah receives the call about the jury's decision while preparing witness notes in her office and immediately recognizes the ominous significance of their quick deliberation, just 4 hours, when similar capital cases typically take days. She rushes to the courthouse through heavy rain, her heels clicking against marble floors as she hurries through security. The atmosphere is suffocating with tension as Adam is escorted in, shoulders slumped, wearing the navy suit she chose for him. Their eyes meet briefly as she touches his hand, a gesture that feels both intimate and inadequate. The courtroom fills with the sound of shuffling papers as the judge reviews the verdict forms, each moment stretching painfully. Adam's grip on Sarah's hand tightens, his palm clammy with fear. The bailiff's voice rings out, "Will the defendant please rise?" Adam stands slowly, reluctantly releasing Sarah's hand, his fingers trembling as the foreperson prepares to announce his fate. The narrative deliberately leaves the verdict unspoken, creating a momentary cliffhanger before catapulting forward 11 years. This time jump reveals that Adam was convicted and sentenced to death, his appeals exhausted one by one despite Sarah's relentless efforts. The final scene unfolds in the stark visiting room of death row, where Sarah arrives dressed in pristine white, an angel of death in a pencil skirt and blazer. Though still legally his wife, as he repeatedly refused to sign divorce papers, sending them back unmarked, she carries an engagement ring from another man and plans to remarry the day after his execution. Their final meeting crackles with unspoken emotions and bitter regrets. Adam, now gray-haired and gaunt, breaks down weeping as Sarah squeezes his hand rhythmically, counting down their final minutes together like a heartbeat. The guard's watchful presence serves as a constant reminder that even this last moment of intimacy isn't truly private. The novel's shocking conclusion reveals the devastating truth behind Kelly's murder and completely inverts readers' understanding of the entire narrative. As Sarah watches Adam's execution from behind a one-way mirror, she reveals herself as Kelly's killer through her chilling internal monologue. Her calculated satisfaction as she watches Adam convulse and scream on the execution table exposes her as a methodical sociopath who orchestrated what she considers the perfect crime. The slight smile playing at her lips as Adam takes his final breath serves as a haunting confirmation of her true nature. Sarah stabbed Kelly 37 times, not out of jealousy or passion, but because Adam's affair threatened her carefully constructed world of control. Each stab wound represented a calculated act of rage, 17 to the torso, 12 to the face, and 8 to the hands that had touched her husband. A divorce would have given him half of everything, making her weak like her mother, whose heroin overdose Sarah now admits to facilitating with 3 additional needles carefully placed to look like track marks from previous use. This revelation casts a dark shadow over Sarah's childhood stories of caring for her troubled mother. The entire investigation and trial were masterfully manipulated by Sarah, utilizing her extensive legal knowledge and connections to ensure Adam's conviction. Rebecca Sanford, the private investigator who appeared to be working for Scott, was actually hired by Sarah months before Kelly's murder. Sarah paid her $50,000 to shadow Adam and feed him false leads, making his amateur investigation appear increasingly erratic and suspicious. She even orchestrated the accidental discovery of Kelly's blood in Adam's car by anonymously tipping off a rookie crime scene technician she knew would be overzealous in his search. The final scene unfolds at the lake house, the very location where she murdered Kelly, where Sarah now lives with Bob, her colleague from the law firm, and their 8-year-old daughter, Summer. The lake house's renovation cleverly concealed any trace of the crime, with new flooring covering the blood-stained boards and fresh paint hiding the splatter patterns Sarah meticulously cleaned. As they drive away from the prison after Adam's execution, Summer's innocent question about the building's purpose receives Sarah's chilling response. "Nothing, sweetheart. Absolutely nothing." The cold detachment in her voice reveals her complete lack of remorse and humanity. This masterful twist forces readers to re-examine every interaction throughout the novel from a dramatically different perspective. Sarah's decision to defend Adam wasn't motivated by love or professional duty, but by her obsessive need to control the narrative and ensure his conviction. Her apparent distress at discovering his affair was actually calculated rage at losing control of her carefully constructed life. Even her suggestion they try for a baby was part of her manipulation, giving Adam hope for their future while she methodically plotted his downfall. Small details take on new significance. Her insistence on handling all the evidence personally, her subtle coaching of witnesses, and her strategic mistakes during the trial, all carefully designed to seal Adam's fate while maintaining her image as the grieving, betrayed wife fighting for justice. The novel's final revelation transforms it from a standard thriller about infidelity and murder into a chilling exploration of sociopathic control. Sarah Morgan emerges as one of the most disturbing fictional characters in recent memory, a woman so determined to maintain perfect control over her life that she's willing to murder her husband's lover, frame him for the crime, and then ensure his conviction and execution while pretending to defend him. Sarah's psychology is rooted in her relationship with her mother, who she describes as weak. She reveals that she helped her mother overdose on heroin, suggesting a pattern of eliminating those who don't fit into her perfect life. Her motivation for killing Kelly wasn't jealousy in the traditional sense. It was the threat Kelly posed to Sarah's carefully constructed world. A divorce would have meant losing half of everything she'd built, an outcome she found unacceptable. What makes Sarah particularly frightening is her ability to compartmentalize and perform different roles perfectly. As a defense attorney, she convincingly plays the role of the betrayed wife fighting for her husband's innocence. In reality, she's orchestrating his destruction while appearing to be his savior. This duality extends to her relationship with her daughter Summer, who she appears to love while showing no remorse for executing Summer's father through legal manipulation. The novel ultimately suggests that the perfect marriage of the title is ironic. What appeared perfect was actually deadly. The real perfection in the story is Sarah's execution of her plan, which succeeded so completely that even Adam went to his death believing in his own innocence rather than suspecting his wife's guilt. Her perfect crime required perfect timing, perfect manipulation, and a perfect understanding of how the legal system could be used against her husband. By the end, readers are left questioning how many perfect relationships might harbor similar darkness beneath their carefully maintained facades. The novel's final twist transforms it from a story about a marriage destroyed by infidelity into a chilling examination of how thoroughly we can be deceived by those closest to us, even as they lead us to our destruction.